At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. And thank you all for joining us. Going, 6 years strong on this program myself and hosting for this and having just some wonderful guests here, you know, getting towards 400 episodes of the program. Really appreciate all of you spending time with us. Of course, visiting CannabisRadio.com, the Cannabis Radio app, subscribing to the show for all major platforms, Apple, Amazon, YouTube Music, or YouTube itself, and Spotify, among other places. Now, my next guest has been growing businesses for more than 30 years as a proven executive possessing a unique mix of skills that have allowed him to be highly successful at a Fortune 100 company and a startup environment. He previously served as managing director at JP Morgan, leading 3 separate investment banking businesses to number one positions over his 14-year career at the firm, an experienced NYSE board member, advisory board member, speaker, volunteer, recipient of the United Hospital Fund's 2018 Distinguished Trustee Award. And let me tell you, we have worked hard to get this gentleman on our program. It's been months to try to get this all set up, but so much has happened. We're happy to always have him on, regular to Cannabis Radio, the CEO and co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners, Anthony Coniglio. Anthony, thanks for being on.
Wow, thank you so much for that very kind introduction. And I'm really happy we were able to make this work. I've been looking forward to this conversation. And congrats on all the success you've had. Nearly 400 episodes. That's pretty impressive. Congrats.
Might have jumped the numbers a little bit in 2020 when we were in pandemic. I was cranking out 3 episodes a week because we had the time. It's like, well, what about we're going to do? I'm going to sit around and do nothing. I'm just going to record. And I did quite a bit here, but I love what you did here. New Lake Capital Partners. Now, just for those, all you stock ticker aficionados, I see there's a lot more talk about that because I saw GameStop style getting pushed once again. It's like dumb money all over again, the movie, like it's this. By the way, OTC markets, the OTCQX, you can find their ticker as NLCP, just so you know. And New Lake Capital Partners is a triple net lease REIT that utilizes its cannabis real estate and financial services experience to purchase properties leased to U.S. cannabis operators. You have tenants that span the cannabis supply chain, working cultivation, manufacturing, and retail, including leading multi-state operators such as PharmaCann, Columbia Care, Curaleaf, and Trueleaf. Yeah, I'm going to just praise you for a minute there in New Leaf real quick, Anthony. So bear with me for about another 30 seconds while I go ahead and, okay, you know, just give the accomplishments here. You evaluated over $1 billion of cannabis real estate assets, $420 million deployed, currently owning 31 properties, 100% of which are leased. The league also boasts year-over-year dividend growth of 5.4%, 0 rent deferrals or vacancies, 12.2% annual yield, 2.6% annual rent escalations, at 14.3 years as the weighted average remaining lease term. Stock, you know, trading a little over $16 right now. And this is like, in only 5 years, this is all accomplished here. A lot of success going on. Obviously, you had your earnings call recently. So a lot of good to say. But now, it required your team to be really aggressive creating this business footprint in the cannabis industry. Talk to me about what it is about putting your foot on the gas and not taking it off.
Yes. You know, it's that old saying, ready, aim, fire. And so sometimes people will mix that up. And for us, very much, we use the ready, aim, fire. So the ready and aim was 2018, 2019, assembling the team and assembling the skill sets we thought were necessary in order to properly invest in the sector. I think we've seen a meaningful cohort of credit funds, as well as real estate organizations that entered the market in 19 and into 20. Some of them have done well, some of them haven't done well. And I think the difference is the ones that did the ready, aim, shoot, because providing capital to this sector is really, really difficult, different than other sectors because of the state-by-state construct and the need to really understand the state and the jurisdiction that, in our case, our tenant, or if somebody's lending, the lender's case, their borrower, you need to understand where they're operating, what does that environment look like, And so, you know, it's kind of you to say, you know, we've accomplished success. We feel like we're still in the early innings of this business, but it was about putting together the right skill sets to make the best decisions possible for our shareholders. And I will make one correction. It was 31 until just a few days ago. We announced recently that we added another property, a cultivation facility in Connecticut. And so now we're 32 properties. We're the second largest owner of cannabis real estate in the country.
Well, I was going to bring that up because you recently announced you've acquired a 58,500 square foot industrial property in East Hartford, Connecticut, and you've also entered into a long-term triple net lease with an affiliate of Michigan-based C3 Industries. We're very familiar with Anchor Runk, the CEO there. We've had him here on a number of programs, most recently on our Cannabis Roundup program. And the investment you're putting in now, $16 million, a purchase price of $4 million, and a $12 million construction allowance to retrofit the former cold storage facility. And that's amazing. The thing is, it's the money that you're putting out there. I don't know a lot of investors that I've seen that I read about constantly that are putting out the kind of money and really, you know, getting yourself really entrenched into various markets in preparation, you know, again, for legalization. It's a matter of there are those people that are out there that are hesitant and might not pull the trigger right away because they're still waiting for things to go along the line. You know, there's a lot of, you know, conventional investors that are not jumping into the space yet. They don't feel like they're just waiting. What's going to happen? What can they get? What are their leverages of access or, you know, ability are they going to have to be able to go and invest in the space? But that's not an issue on your end.
No, I mean, if you think about the real thesis for NewLake, we thought we could enter the marketplace. We thought we could invest in quality real estate with quality operators at above market yields because we are taking a meaningful element of risk. And certainly the last 18 months has demonstrated how risky this industry can be. And we thought we would take that portfolio of long duration, higher yielding assets, and over time, the equity capital markets will value that like a more traditional portfolio of real estate cash flows. So there's real upside to the valuation of our company over time as the industry normalizes. So if you come back to a number of the items you talked about, each one of them, whether it's a state that adopts a medical program or a state that converts from a medical to an adult use program, or the Schedule 3 announcement, or people talking about SAFER or CAOA or any other legislation, all of this activity and the articles that are written in the news pieces and the podcasts all bring us a step closer to normalization. And then ultimately over time, a long time out, legalization. And so that's where we think we can step into the business, be a quality partner to the industry and grow along with it. And in the meantime, provide really nice returns for our investors is our objective.
So we're going to real quickly go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about descheduling. Listen, I know everyone and their mother wanted to talk about this since the start of the month. We heard that the DEA was going to happen. I even said it, you know, 6 months ago. Yes, HHS made a recommendation, and it's just a matter, not a if, but when. They finally made the announcement, April 30th. Here we go. And obviously, I can't tell you how many responses I had from people that wanted to go ahead and make comments here on the network about it. So you're one of the first we're going to be able to do that because everybody just had to get scheduled. So I'm here again with Anthony Coniglio, CEO, co-founder of NewLake Capital Partners. And website, if you want to go ahead and take a look right now, is newlake.com, newlake.com. Again, if you are looking to go ahead and put some money down on a stock on the OTC markets, OTCQX, NLCP. Back with Anthony and more questions and talk about the scheduling coming up after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Anthony Coniglio, CEO, co-founder of NewLake Capital Partners. So you had your recent earnings call earlier this month as we're recording in May, and you said, quote, looking forward, the cannabis industry has much to be excited about following the proposal to reschedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 and increase a meaningful dialogue among congressional leaders. Now, just to update the audience, as we last talked to you, Associated Press says five sources close to the matter confirmed the EA will recommend that cannabis be moved from a Schedule 1 substance to a Schedule 3 to the White House Office of Management and Budget. And I want to take from a story from Cannabis Business Times. They talked to the firm of Vicente Cederberg, and we've had them many times on the program as well. And they talk about that the financial implications that come with this. I want to ask you about that. So we've spoken here on the program about how cannabis businesses will no longer be subject to tax penalties under Internal Revenue Code Section 280E. And Without that tax burden, more will be infused into the system. And your team mentioned, quote, well, they said here, once cannabis is rescheduled, the immediate impact is that 280E, which has long prevented plant-touching companies from deducing or deducting ordinary business expenses, will longer apply, eliminating what has been a massive barrier to profitability. And also said, investor sentiment, this is from Charles Alvesetti, who I've had on our grassroots marketing program, he said, will likely improve as rescheduling shifts the risk analysis. And they also went on to say that, though there would be an impact on capital markets, companies still would not be able to list on major U.S. exchanges, and Schedule 3 would still be a barrier to legal protections like bankruptcy. Well, what I want to think right there in front is say, investor sentiment will improve as rescheduling shifts the risk analysis. What do you say about that mentioned right there? And, you know, does that open the door for more investors to start coming in? Are they going to look at more closely? Are they looking to go ahead and pull the trigger and invest?
Yeah, listen, there's a number of things to unpack there. So I certainly agree that Schedule 3 eliminates the onerous 280E taxation. That's pretty open and shut based on statute. I also agree that it doesn't open up New York or NASDAQ listings or access to the U.S. bankruptcy court system. So I completely agree there. You know, however, the comment around 280E being a barrier to profitability, I don't entirely agree with that. Certainly, it helps those that haven't been able to get profitable yet. But in fact, if you look at some of the recent earnings announced, you'll see that there's operators that are profitable with paying 280E taxes. And in fact, we have a number of them in our portfolio. Just look to some of the announcements that were made last week as we're recording this earnings started rolling out last week. And I recently wrote a piece highlighting that I think many investors in the cannabis space are overlooking the hard work and the great job the operators have done over the last 18 months in getting those costs under control and positioning them for long-term success without that tax reform. So yes, 280E will help, and it's going to help some become profitable, but there's a growing list of companies that have figured it out already. And that's fantastic because then the 280E savings allows companies to become better credits, allows them to raise capital because their valuations will be buoyed. They'll be a better, more profitable organization, and gets them into what I call a positive feedback loop. So by having a better valuation, they could issue equity to re-equitize the balance sheet. They can reduce debt, reduce interest expense, thus increasing cash flow, which means their valuation should continue to go up, which allows them potentially further recapitalize the balance sheet. So it really puts you into a positive feedback loop, especially if you can match it with continued improvement in your gross margins.
Now, part of the thing I would make mention of is if they're trying to say there's a barrier to profitability, I'll take the example of Ascend Wellness. Right now, they're looking to go ahead and ask the IRS to go back 3 years and audit their returns because of all this change, because of the potential $10 million back they can reinvest, or what they can do what with it, of profit they can go ahead and now collect, and they can actually go ahead and claim, you know, for themselves also being traded. So that's one of those areas I could look at with that. I want to take from a statement that was put from your team in a press release saying that, quote, we estimate our tenants would collectively enjoy more than $400 million of annual tax savings and a related increase to cash flows for the businesses. Furthermore, this important step by the federal government should provide a catalyst for incremental investment into the sector, which we believe would allow operators to recapitalize their balance sheets, resulting in further improvement in the industry's credit quality, including our tenant base. And also we mentioned of that, with less than 0.1 times debt or EBITDA, NewLake has ample capacity to capture growth opportunities that will likely come from this important announcement. So for those that are, you know, if there's companies that are looking to go ahead and get themselves publicly traded and look at that option now, that less risk being provided, more legitimacy obviously being brought without that 280E tax regulation over their head. You know, do you see that where the tax savings that come in plus the chance of incremental investment because, you know, companies can now take the option of going publicly traded because there's a better chance of being traded?
Certainly. I mean, I bring it back to valuation. So if a company was debating whether they should go public or stay private, if there is a better cash flow profile to that business because of the elimination of 280E, they certainly can see that as a boost to valuation and seek to go public. I mean, as a former banker and a guy who's taken a number of companies public in my career, I'd say that the reason you should go public is because you don't have an alternative source of capital. You believe that the public capital markets will be valuing your company better or more robustly than the private capital markets, or you need to monetize some of your equity for yourself or for certain shareholders. And it's a difficult process being public. There's a lot of governance required. It's expensive. And so I don't want to get too far down that path, but if folks were holding back on being public because they were waiting for this additional boost to their cash flows, I'd probably say that they should continue to hold off and really focus on gross margin and try to get themselves to a business model that doesn't necessarily need reform, because I think we're still a far way away from getting the final rule and the ultimate reform, and investors won't invest on a proposed rule or even an article that cites five sources saying that there will be a proposed rule that'll be filed. So we're still a long way off until the final rule, and I think people should prepare themselves to survive and thrive without it for the next year, potentially the next year, probably 7 to 9 months.
And then the other part when it comes to the scheduling that we just want to make clear, I'm taking from a website from a law firm of Dibbawas and Plimpton. They make a point when just putting up a frequently asked questions kind of a section about the legality for financial institutions to serve cannabis businesses, that even with this descheduling, the reclassification, that it would not immediately obviate the potential legal risk for financial institutions of aiding and abetting CSA violations or violating anti-money laundering laws by handling illicit proceeds generated by cannabis businesses operating in violation of federal law. It's possible for financial institutions to avoid risks in serving companies engaged in permissible medical marijuana activities, but such companies would need to be in compliance with FDA and DEA requirements, to which they are not currently subjected to. There's still the thing that comes by that. So there's some alleviation, a little bit of a lifting of various, you know, obstacles that come in for, again, tax savings. But as the other orders have been saying, they're pretty much in lockstep. The banking issue is still going to be an issue. And that's, I'm guessing that's still an issue that comes across that is still, while there is some relief that we've talked about here, in terms of that, in terms of what medical research can be done, it's still a small step that it's not a SAFE Banking Act and it's not federal legalization.
Completely agree with that. Moving to Schedule 3 simply puts it on a less restrictive schedule, but it is still restrictive. It is still illegal. Dibbawas is spot on with my read and understanding. We spend a lot of time on this, obviously, that the illegality remains, the issues for the banks remain, and that's why safe banking continues to be an important piece of legislation for this industry from a safety and soundness perspective, being able to get these businesses that are operating under legal constructs to be able to access the banking system is important. Now, I do want to just add, it's not that there are no banks. We all know that those of us in the industry, we all know that there is the FinCEN, Financial Enforcement Crimes Network. Sure. FinCEN, which is the Department of the Treasury Department, puts out a list, I believe it's quarterly, and there's usually 500 banks or so that are filing suspicious activity reports or SARs that are specifically designed for organizations that bank with the cannabis industry. And I will say, for us, whenever we do a transaction across our 13 tenants, public and private companies, they all have banking relationships. Is it hard? Yes. Is it more expensive than normal? Yes. But they all have established banking relationships. But SAFE is about getting cash out of dispensaries. SAFE is about lowering the expense. And to me, it's an added taxation for this industry. And so hopefully we'll see some movement on that, although I'm not holding my breath.
But now, do you think there's any change in the risk analysis or just the thought, well, okay, so someone wants to go and try to, you know, any lending across, the interest rate's going to drop a little bit lower just because now we have a little more change as the scheduling. Does that, and just as a symbolic gesture, do you think that kind of changes how much, you know, companies are being charged for their banking services?
Unlikely, because again, with Schedule 3, it's still illegal. You still have the AML issues. If you get safe banking passed, I still think we won't likely see much in the way of savings and cost, because the federal regulators will have to come out with a construct to be able to regulate an activity that's legal in some states and illegal for others. And so I think the banks will continue to have increased compliance costs when serving this industry, and those compliance costs will be handed off to the industry through fees. And so while better, I am a little cautious on projecting a meaningful decrease in banking fees if SAFE Banking passes.
The other thing you've also made quite a bit, and you've also mentioned this in the earnings call that you had, is the announcement now that the Florida Supreme Court's ruling on the proposed constitutional amendment ballot for adult use cannabis. It is now going to be Amendment 3 on the 2024, you know, a general election ballot. I'm in the state of Florida myself here in West Palm Beach, so I'm looking to go forward to putting down yes for Amendment 3. And, you know, knowing back what was in 2016 when medical was being put up for the ballot and it did get overwhelming support, we also know that it has 75% of Florida support right now in our most recent polls. It's, I don't see where, again, it's whatever the response is north of the I-4 corridor. It's central North Florida or the Panhandle that could make the biggest difference. But I think overall, the medical market has been done very well. Cannabis sales already have eclipsed $2.5 billion for the state, according to a statement that you put out, your team put out for the announcement, and that a fully developed adult use market could exceed $6 billion in the next few years. And for yourselves, you also have, you know, tenants in your portfolio, a lot of the major MSOs with Trulieve, Curaleaf, Cresco, Air, the cannabis, and also you lease your property to Curaleaf in Mount Dora, Florida, which is the main hub of cultivation activity. Very well entrenched in Florida already. For yourselves, you looked at this and also the conversion for medical to adult use in Ohio right now ongoing and getting set up. So what do you see in particular for Florida in terms of investment opportunities? Because is it just looking at once Florida is, once that ballot measure gets passed, I say does, I'll put my money on it.
Okay.
Then what changes for New Lake? What do you look at in Florida? What do you see as a possibility that you're just waiting for this to happen to do something?
Yeah, well, listen, I'm very hopeful that it passes in Florida with a 60.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
2% threshold, it's pretty high. It's difficult. It's an election year. Abortion's on the ballot. President Trump or former President Trump is a Floridian resident. He'll actually have an opportunity to vote on this, which is an added interesting point. You know, somebody should ask him how he's going to vote on 3 and get him on the record. The fact that you have DeSantis now actively coming out against it and looking to raise money to campaign against it, you know, it's going to be tight. But let's say that you're right, you're on the ground there and it passes. I think that you're going to see continued investment in dispensaries, continued investment in the distribution. And I think you're going to see people invest in expanding their cultivation capacity because, as you pointed out in our comments, we think there's, over the next few years, the opportunity for significant growth in Florida. What I'm happy to report is I haven't yet seen a significant amount of CapEx getting spent in advance of the ballot initiative, right? In previous cycles, we saw organizations overbuilding before a cycle or a ballot initiative, which created meaningful risk to those organizations should the ballot not pass. Here, I'm happily seeing a little bit more judgment, a little bit more holding back until there's more certainty. But we think there'll be need for real estate capital around dispensaries and around cultivation build out in Florida. Moving to Ohio, which you talked about, we're really excited for Ohio, and we have a couple of properties in the state already. Really excited to see that that medical market become an adult use market. That medical market really underperformed for a host of reasons, in particular the form factors, in particular some of the caps. So we're excited to see that become a full-fledged adult use market, and we're encouraged by what we're hearing out of the regulatory regime there. And again, here, while there's been more build out over the last, I'd say, 5 years in Ohio, not necessarily getting ready for adult use, but just build out in general, there's probably less build out that's required. And the analogy we would use would be Missouri. If you look at Missouri, there was a fair amount of build up leading up to the ballot initiative. And then the adult use sales, when that was turned on, didn't require a heck of a lot more cultivation capacity. And I think we're probably the same in Ohio for the first year or two till it really, really gets ramped up. And then maybe you're going to get some needed additional expansion capacity, you know, after another 12 to 18 months. These are very nuanced conversations, of course, right?
Right.
We look at a lot of data. We look at right? We look at about how much data is as goes into sales, et cetera. So we could do a whole show on it.
With Florida, I look at the fact that I need to see what the Campaign for Smart and Safe Florida, the people that were able to get the ballot initiative put out there. Again, the time to go and do the vote is during an election, presidential election season. This is where you're going to get the most voters to come out. That's how it happened in 2016. They can get it done in 2022. It was the time we're going to do it now. And on top of that, like you said, I think the abortion issue is going to get so much more ad time than cannabis would ever get. I just don't think that's, I think that's going to get lost in the whole discussion. If you're going to see a lot of political ads at all, that I think that's it gets lost in there. And I think, you know, as long as, I mean, yeah, you know, Governor DeSantis can go ahead and make his comments, but I don't think they can hold enough when it comes to the hand thing. And I can understand, listen, he wants to make sure that it's not within the hands of children. But again, once you have this in place, you have the medical in place. I don't know how much of an illicit market there is, if there is at all. But like, if there's an illicit market, it's not coming from Florida product. It's coming from other states. Mm-hmm. And I think if Smart and Safe, I want Smart and Safe Florida on this program. I don't know if it's truly, if I got to talk to her, Kim Rivers, or whoever it is. I'm not putting any figures. I just want to have that organization on this program just to know what their plan of operation is. Because my other thing was, would Big Pharma or the big medical industry try to get involved in this? But, you know, from people I'm talking to, they don't think they're going to worry about it. They're not going to care. It's like they're off on their own agenda. So
I generally agree with that, yeah.
And I think that's what's going to happen. I think there's going to be too much other, you know, noise going on that's going to take away from cannabis being an issue that people will see on the ballot. Because, I mean, they see all the MSOs, all the big facilities. It's not like there's a lot of small operations here. Right. I mean, of the companies that you represent, they all do a great job over here. I mean, I love the storefronts they put out, the way they're presented. They're in great locations, and they're doing a great job. Yeah, they're doing good here.
A lot of taxes, yeah.
It's very corporate, but it's done well. And I can't knock them for that. I think they've done a really good job of serving the industry as they are here, and I don't think they've had any problem with it. I think Florida's been, the rollout for Florida has been really well. And I think for adult use, it just helps more. I don't think there's going to be much of an issue to that. And when it comes to Ohio, Ohio and Florida both lockstep, because what does Ohio do in terms of their rollout of adult use? And then once, I mean, look, with Governor DeSantis, he had to sign, you know, when a medical cannabis came into place when he was starting off his administration, he had to sign then, he has to sign now. And you
certainly has. He certainly has supported cannabis at various parts of his term. And he signed stuff into law. He had the opportunity to really block. It's just interesting now that you have him, you have a governor who's been so focused on choice and leaving people to have their choice to now potentially campaigning against choice, right? And he's saying like people shouldn't, they should only be able to have it for medical and not necessarily for adult use.
Right.
And I get the issues that he's raising. I don't think anybody in the industry has any interest in children partaking in the industry. I've never heard anybody even close to that. And so it's something we could all agree on. And certainly, I think he's picking at the riff of cannabis smoke and walking down the street. And a lot of New Yorkers transplanted to Florida who say they fear they're going to walk down the street and they walk through a cloud of smoke. And that's a real issue, but there's ways to fix that. We dealt with that with cigarette smoke. There's real ways where towns and counties through ordinance can deal with that if they think it's an issue or if their local residents feel it's an issue. I don't think you should take away people's rights to have access to cannabis and ignore that you could easily fix the issue you're identifying through ordinance if that's the way you want to go.
I mean, when it comes to Ohio and Florida, when they roll out to adult use, probably won't hear a whole lot about social equity, or if that's something that's going to be involved at Smart and Safe or whoever's going to be out there, once the rollout to adult use comes in, this is where, you know, when medical came into play, the MSOs, they did a really good job of, hey, we're going to kind of push out the other petition initiative out there to say, okay, we're not going to worry about social equity. We're not going to worry about, you know, decriminalizing and all the other things that are brought up in other states when they roll out their programs. They're not worrying about that part. They're just going to say, well, we're just going to bring cannabis to market. We're going to go very corporate, very MSO. It'll be controlled. It'll be, you know, these bigger stores or these bigger outfits that can run chains that, you know, they'll do the job properly. They're going to take care of that. But it won't be that route where, you know, there is the social equity or smaller growers, craft businesses. There's not much of a business of that so far until we learn about until the battle initiative passes. But I want to know if those conversations get into play in Ohio or Florida. That's something they're even going to consider. But we haven't heard anything about that so far. But it might just be a different model altogether.
Well, never know. I think that's part of the key. In Florida, it's called a forced vert model or forced vertical model. So for you have to grow it, distribute it, sell it, transport. So in that forced vert model, you have to have a tremendous amount of capital in order to build the facility or secure the facility, grow, get it into the store, have the store distribution. And so it doesn't really allow right now for the opportunity to just be a grower or just have a dispensary. You have to do the whole thing, which makes it extremely expensive. And therefore, the ones that have the licenses tend to be the larger, more corporate ones because they have that access to capital. All coming back to capital.
There we go. We're going to go back to commercial. And when we come back, want to go take something else you talk about when it comes to the level of growth that you might see from descheduling and investments again that can happen in terms of cultivation or dispensaries and just for greater demand from consumers and potential for more sales. I'm going to hear with Anthony Coniglio, CEO, co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners. Again, newlake.com, newlake.com. And again, OTC Markets. If you want to go to their stock ticker, it is NLCP on the OTCQX. Back after a short break with final questions.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
We're in the home stretch with here with Anthony Coniglio here on Blunt Business, CEO, co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners. In your interview call recently, you said, quote, as a result, it really seen a lack of cultivation capacity. And as we've watched more and more dispensaries come online, you're seeing greater and greater demand pull from the consumer, more dispensaries, potential for more sales. So the level of growth that you could see right now, we already talked a little bit earlier about what descheduling might do and the investment that can happen now as we're waiting for the journey towards that eventual federal legalization, which will eventually happen. I see 3 to 5 years, but in the meantime, what we're looking at is what needs to be done in terms of making sure that the seed to sale process continues to grow and there's more than enough supply to meet demand.
Yes. And again, I want to emphasize it's rescheduling as opposed to descheduling.
Oh,
so we're
going
to stay significantly restrictive here. You know, it's a very state-by-state analysis. And so in some states, you have enough cultivation capacity and it's a matter of bringing on additional dispensaries to grow distribution for the state, which will fuel additional demand. In fact, you could look at a Michigan or a Massachusetts as two examples of that, where the more dispensaries that come online, you're starting to see the price point at the consumer decrease. We think there's some signs of individuals converting from the illicit market to the legal market as the price point comes down and becomes more competitive with the illicit market. And therefore, you end up getting sales that grow. You have growing sales, you have more demand for product, you're going to end up seeing the need for some expanded cultivation. So that's how that works. But it really depends on the state to see how that's going to unfold.
You also had a story you wrote for MK Biz Daily talking about the cannabis industry's optimism fueled by operational upgrades. And you may mention that for many companies, you know, the progress you're making right now is establishing the ability to survive and even thrive in a world without incremental reform. And, you know, that the industry itself has had remarkable resilience in overcoming daunting obstacles, inflation, price compression, lack of capital, depressed revenue. And while some operators failed to require reorganization in the receivership, the majority responded admirably to such challenges, prioritized generating cash flow, improving margins, reducing corporate expenses, and maintaining discipline and capital expenditures. So you give a lot of companies credit, you know, not only reducing costs, but also honing cultivation techniques, refining output, and optimizing processes. So
yes,
from everything I always hear, it always feels like, you know, where I wonder if the companies are doing enough to really help market themselves, put themselves out there and do enough to take care of their bottom line. But I guess you're seeing a lot more things that we don't ever hear a whole lot about in the press.
Yeah, I think I was alluding to this earlier. I think if you dialed back 18 to 24 months ago when we started to see prices drop significantly at the various state levels and you saw margin contraction, you saw inflation going up, there was a tremendous amount of doom and gloom. And there were many predictions for the industry's demise. Fast forward to today, and a lot of that didn't come to fruition. Now, for sure, there were a couple of failures for sure, there were quite a few workouts that that occurred. But by and large, when you look at the hard work that these organizations went through, think about the layoffs that they had to execute on. Think about the cost savings, the belt tightening. Think about the ancillary companies around this industry that saw their own sales decrease because they were selling less marketing to the industry. They were selling less product to the industry. People, organizations became very efficient from a supply chain perspective, not sitting on as much inventory. And so as they got better and better, margins have been improving and improving, both gross margins as well as what falls to the bottom line. And there's just not enough being talked about how good a job some of the management teams have done to get themselves to a position where, lo and behold, some of them today are profitable after paying 280E taxes. And so that just sets the table for continued success if you do get some 280 relief in the future. It's quite commendable, quite frankly. I think people are overlooking it a little too much.
So, Anthony, I really appreciate you taking time out to go ahead and, you know, give me your input and insight into all of this. There's so much there. A lot of optimism, you know, financially, investment-wise, that's great. And, you know, just closing things out, I mean, do you see where more institutional investment or more outside outliers are going to start investing in? Are we seeing a thing where they're going to finally take that direction and start putting more money in, and there's more capital to be put in here to build more?
I look at it as a curve where, yeah, you're getting a little bit of lift. I think it's starting to happen a little bit at the margin, but not much. I think it'll happen a little bit more once rescheduling is finalized. But ultimately, the biggest issue for investors in this sector is the ability to custody assets in the public markets. For those investors that want to own public equities, if they can't custody, if their prime broker — this is now into the nuts and bolts of how investing works — but if their prime broker can't custody a stock or a bond for them, they won't invest in it. And so that's chilling. That's an additional real chilling effect on the demand from the investor side. And even into the private round, a lot of times people are looking for a public exit to invest in a private round. And if that public exit isn't there because, you know, the public investors aren't going to show up for a deal because they can't custody it, it's going to chill the private round as well. And so, yes, rescheduling is great. It's a headline. It brings people in at the margin. But the real change will be getting custody for this industry, or allowing them to trade on major exchanges. That is when you'll see the significant inflow of institutional capital. And unfortunately, I think most of them are going to sit on the sidelines until that happens. But we can't end on that note. We got to end on something happy. Come on.
No, what we need to know is prompt them. Hey, listen, don't be waiting for all this to go and go on. The thing is, you know, quit being speculators that you are with every other stock market price or risk. Okay, this is a growing industry. You know, you want to go ahead and look at long term growth. So start investing now anyway. Don't even worry about the fact that you have money. Obviously, there's a lot of these people out here that have more than enough money to go and put the long term growth. Get into your walls hot, and don't even listen to what the press says out there. Just go on your own gut and realize you're going to get in here. And, you know, lobbying efforts, all the things that are going to be happening to get legalization to happen here. And you're just getting further proof by every state that keeps going online. Yeah. You know, you don't have to go and wait around here, wait for Texas to go ahead and be legalized at some point. No, it's just going to happen. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing. You were mentioning with former President Trump. We know where President Biden — I mean, listen, we give credit here for the fact that the DEA was spoken to by the HHS, and this was made recommendation by the administration, so they get the credit for that.
Yes.
But I know that, if I remember from President Trump, when they were talking about the States Act, I remember that I was, again, a bipartisan bill. I remember hearing about, well, if there's a bill to sign, I would consider it. I don't think it was anything where it wasn't made a big deal to former President Trump at that time. And, you know, yep, depending on the election, if he makes it into office, I don't see why, you know, that's not a consideration as a state, you know, for state by state basis, as opposed to a full blanket of federal legalization. I think you just do where, I think that's where what happens. And there'll be enough to online. It's just the lobbying money needs to go out there to get that done. That's always what I always say. They need to spend more than Big Pharma, which is four times more than what they're doing right now.
Listen, I agree with your assessment. A lot of people point to the Jeff Sessions action of rescinding the Cole memo.
Right.
And they think that was putting the stake in the ground that the administration was anti-cannabis. Actually, when you read the press release and you look at the context for that announcement, I think that announcement was less about cannabis and more about Jeff Sessions putting a statement out there that we will not choose the laws that we enforce. The laws are out there and we're going to enforce the laws that Congress tells us are on the books. And we're not going to pick and choose which laws. I think they were very worried about the precedent of being able to write a memo and say, we just won't enforce this law. And you could apply that to immigration. You could apply that to a bunch of other federal policies. And so, and I think the proof of that statement is that really the administration didn't do anything to crack down on the industry. So they rescinded the Cole memo and everybody thought, oh, here comes the enforcement. And it never actually came because we had the Roebucker Farm Amendment. So there are other, I think, issues at play there. But I'm going to leave you on this positive note when we talked about investing, right? So the opportunity is now really for individual investors and the smaller investors, because if the institutions aren't there yet, now is the time where you can get in, you could average in at prices that you may find attractive, do the research, figure out the companies that you believe are the long-term winners in the sector, management teams you feel you can trust, people that have the right level of transparency in their financials and their footnotes. And I always encourage people, read the footnotes. Ton of information in the footnotes. But now's the opportunity to get in at quality valuations and just hold it, right? It has to be something that you're comfortable holding and can stomach the volatility. Because when the institutions do come in, and with a lot of powder, I think will come in over time, I just can't tell you when, I think you're going to see valuations move up decidedly to the upside.
Right.
So that's my pitch. That's where I think the opportunity is. And over time, I think we're going to realize a lot of value.
There's the positive spin right there. I was looking for Anthony. Thank you for that. And again, website is newlake.com, newlake.com. I'll say the ticker one more time. The OTCQX, you can find New Lake Capital Partners at NLCP. Anthony, thank you for being on with us. Really appreciate you taking time out.
Thank you so much for having me. Really enjoyed it. And let's do it again soon. Let's do it after the Florida ballot. And we'll do a big debrief on Florida and how the
role of
Ohio's going.
Well, pencil that in for right up before on the holidays. That'll be a good little Christmas stocking stuff for Amendment 3 goes yes. I'll bet on it.
Count me in.
Who wants to take me on the bet? Let's go. Anyway, Anthony Coniglio, CEO, co-founder of New Lake Capital Partners. Thanks for being on here on Blunt Business. And listeners, thanks for listening in. We'll talk to you next time.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.